The chief medical officer for England has announced that the latest person to be diagnosed with coronavirus in the UK is the first to have contracted it here, not abroad. The man who lives in Surrey is the 20th person in the UK to contract the virus. Dr. Natalie McDermott, who's an infectious disease specialist at King's College London, says other countries have seen COVID-19 spread among the community.
We have seen such cases in several other nations around the world, and I'm sure that Public Health England will do their best to get to the bottom of where this individual may have become infected or how he may have become infected. But it's a possibility they may not be able to identify that person, and that poses a significant challenge when trying to contain an epidemic.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says it's planning to send a mission to Iran next week. Officials there say that 34 people have died, although health sources have told the BBC the actual figure is more like 200. More than 50 countries have now reported infections of the new coronavirus. Dr. Mike Ryan is head of the WHO's Emergency Health Programme, and he says this is not a pandemic yet.
If we say there's a pandemic of coronavirus, we're essentially accepting that every human on the planet will be exposed to that virus. The data does not support that as yet, and China have clearly shown that that's not necessarily the natural outcome of this event if we take action, if we move quickly.
Well, whether the virus is a pandemic or not, it's having a pronounced effect on the global economy. Stock markets around the world have fallen this week, with the US indexes heavily affected. They ended the week down 10% or more from last Friday. The chair of the US Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, went so far as to put out a statement saying the US central bank was closely monitoring developments. While the fundamentals of the US economy remain strong, however, the coronavirus poses evolving risks to economic activity. The question is why? Why does a novel virus originating in an inland city in China force the chair of the Fed to make a statement like this? Isn't this China's economic problem, or is China's problem now our problem? Let's speak to Willie Shi, who is the Robert and Jane Sijic Professor of Management Practice at Harvard Business School. We've also got David Dubois with us as well. Professor Shi, first of all, though, you were in China quite recently, I understand, with a group of students. What was happening then with regards to the way the regime there was dealing with the coronavirus?
Well, good evening, Dutton. I think when we were there, it was actually the beginning of January. So it was before the regime actually kind of recognized the problem that they had on hands. So we were in the run-up up to the Lunar New Year. So it was actually a very busy time of year where a lot of factories were trying to get their shipments out before the New Year in anticipation of this traditional shutdown. Now, usually the workers in the factories will go home to their hometowns, many times in inland provinces, like in Hubei province, or Wuhan is located, of course. And, we were just there before all this happened. So we saw a very busy time. We saw traffic congestion. We saw enormous amount of traffic going out of the ports in preparation for that Lunar New Year.
Professor, bear with us. We'll try and get a better line for you in a moment or two. Meanwhile, let me introduce David Dubois, who's the president and CEO of the International Association of Exhibitions and Events, joining us now from Texas. You've cancelled the MWC, the Mobile World Congress, David, the world's largest annual trade show for the mobile phone industry. Cancelled it last week. That must have been a huge decision. Fundamentally, though, what was the reasoning behind the cancellation?
Well, good evening to everyone. And I can tell you that that was not an easy decision made by that organization. The economic impact for all the attendees and the exhibitors and all the trade that would have happened at that annual show was significant. So they did not take it lightly when they made that decision, but obviously all of us in the global exhibition and events industry, first and foremost, we share heartfelt support for anyone who's, and all of us that are dealing with this, but we are also businessmen and women that have to look at the realities of attendance, economic impact on a show like that. But more importantly, it's all about safety, security, and health of attendees that go to business events and trade shows around the world.
And it is the whole of the exhibition industry right around the world that's taken a hit from this crisis at the moment. The Geneva Motor Show had its plug pulled out. Facebook's Developers Conference in May has been very heavily scaled back, and other shows. And there might be sporting events as well that we're talking about already that might be considered for either scaling down or completely shut down. Which is the, what's the impetus, though, do you think, from the host of these shows? Is it because people are afraid, or are they taking a preemptive step themselves not to, you know, if they are at risk of spreading the virus, not to do so?
Well, exactly, and it's all of the above. And as I mentioned, at the end of the day, it is the responsibility of all of us, governments around the world, business ladies and gentlemen who own and put on these shows on behalf of their industries. There are about 15 industries that we track globally every year through the Center for Exhibition Industry Research that identifies trends. And I can tell you, since 2008, when we went through the global economic depression, I guess the best way to say it, we've seen growth every single quarter up until now. And obviously there's a tail to economic tail to all of this that is, at this time, we're not in a position, it's too early to tell what that economic impact is. But at the end of the day, we all have to make decisions for the safety, security, and health of attendees, even to the detriment of economic negative impact.
Professor Shi is back with us, Professor Willie Shi of Harvard Business School. Professor Shi, David Dubois mentioned there the economic slowdown of 2008. Could this coronavirus trigger a similar trade slowdown right across the world?
Well, I think one of the things that is happening is China is much more integrated into the world economy, and what we're seeing is a dependence for manufactured goods or components or raw materials that is actually much higher than we saw back in the early 2000s and even in 2008. There's been tremendous growth in the last decade plus. Okay, and now what you see essentially for the past few weeks has been essentially the shutdown of the second largest economy in the world. And I liken it very much to kind of a slow motion train wreck, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, we had the Lunar New Year, so many companies, many retailers, for example, were planning for that. So they saw their inventory coming in. But if you think about the transit times for Asia, especially for ocean cargo, you know, it takes 28 to 35 days to get to Europe from, say, the Pearl River Delta. Okay, so all of that stuff has been going on normally. And right about now, people should be seeing their last shipments before this chaos broke out in China. Okay, and if you looked in China towards late January, early February, we saw a complete shutdown of economic activity. We saw a complete shutdown of logistics, the transportation network, right? So restarting that is going to be a huge problem. Now, coupled with what our other guests said in terms of kind of this fear driving, I don't want to attend conferences, I don't want to risk exposing my people, you know, so that's going to kind of cool economic activity, as well as we're going to start seeing supplies and shortages, right? So it's going to take a while to sort this thing out.
What is the impact of shutting down trade shows like the Mobile World Congress, David Dubois? For us, it just seems like the industry patting itself on the back, showing off its new goods and so on. But is there a much more profound economic impact when you shut down a trade show like the Mobile World Congress?
Oh, absolutely. The global exhibition industry is estimated to be about $300 billion in direct and indirect economic impact. and it makes up about one-third of the global, what we call meetings, incentive, convention, and exhibition industry, which is estimated to be $1.3 trillion. Now, that is just the economic impact of those events that happen around the world. Because trade shows are really intended, whether it's a consumer show, whether it's a business-to-business show, we are all about trade. And so, as the professor suggested, and I totally agree with him, that when you put any barriers to global trade, and our barriers that are going up now in the exhibition industry, that's where a lot of buying and selling happen. That's where a lot of, let's say this woman who's attending is in charge of procurement for a major company, and she, as an example, is not able to spend 2 or 3 days at a trade show understanding what the new technologies are, what the new agricultural systems are, what the new financial and technology systems are. You know, for example, the Consumer Electronics Show, 180,000 people every year in Las Vegas, the amount of trade, buying and selling, and even more importantly, the sharing of information on how to have a better world that we all live in, all the wonderful gadgets and technologies that are available. In the Mobile World Congress, all of the conversations that take place among thousands and thousands of people, exhibitors and attendees doing business, our trade shows around the world drive a lot of the economic success that all of us enjoy.
It makes it sound, Professor Shi, as if the world's trade is behind the curve of new technology, because most of us, consumers that is, do a lot of our trade now online. We have those conversations that David Dubois is describing, those face-to-face conversations that he's describing. We have them online now. You know, when you want to buy a product, you go to a certain online shop, if you like, and you know, if you want to find out about the product, you go to another social media to find out what other people have been talking about and describing the product. Is world trade, does it need to catch up with the reality that you don't need to do business face to face anymore?
No, I'm going to side with David on this one. I used to be in industry before I came to the school, and I would tell you that, you know, we're coming up on March, and February, March would be traditionally the time you would be placing your orders for the back-to-school season and the holiday season, right? Because, you know, one of the reasons of the Consumer Electronics Show was in January, or Mobile World Congress was, you know, in January. One of the reasons it's time there is this is part of the product cycle where buyers are coming to those trade shows and they are ordering their merchandise for the fall back-to-school season for delivery starting in August or September, whether it's going to retail stores or going to the online stores, right? So already we're getting a lot of word, for example, the toy manufacturers. You know, I think it's going to be kind of a sparse holiday season because you know, they can't show their wares and people can't do their buying now for that fall season. So it's going to be a delayed impact, but I think we're going to feel it, you know, for the better part of the year and maybe even longer.
But it's a wake-up call, isn't it, for business that this coronavirus crisis, is it not a wake-up call that maybe we have to do business another way? David Dubois first and then Professor Shi.
Well, it's very, very important, and we say all the time in our industry, the business events and exhibition industry, that when you look somebody in the eye, and if I met the professor at a show in the academic world or in the college buying and purchasing, there are big shows, as the professor knows, where the new publications and the new literatures and the new papers that are talking about healthcare and what needs to be done with new pharmaceuticals coming out, big pharmaceutical shows that are going to be affected by this. So it will have a long tail, but I really want to emphasize, as I think is the theme of this conversation, that probably, we don't have a statistic, but there are a lot of shows that are going on. The attendance may drop a bit for a lot of different reasons, whether it's fear, whether it's folks coming from affected countries. But we have to continue to meet face-to-face, and we need to do it in a very healthy and programmatic way, listening to the WHO and all the different country healthcare systems that are indeed cautioning us to use soap when we wash our hands and be really careful. But we should not stop traveling, because there are only a few countries where travel has been banned. In the United States, we've not had one single show canceled. Some have been postponed. Some are seeing attendance decreases. But we must continue, like in SARS. SARS was a 6 or 8 week epidemic. And we're hopeful that the bounce back that happened after SARS and some of the other diseases that we've incurred over the last 10 or 15 years, we are looking for and must continue to stay positive and get people traveling again. We're all looking for the clouds to clear here and the sunshine to come out, and we have to stay positive.
What about the huge sporting events that are scheduled for this year, Professor Shi? I was thinking of the Olympics. Obviously, the sporting events have to be face-to-face. You can't get away from that. And they bring in a lot of business, and they cost a lot to fund, to be frank. What lessons can be learned now for that type of business, if you like?
Well, I think that's a difficult question. Obviously, there have been a lot of questions about the Olympics coming up, okay? And, you know, the question is always, when you put people in close quarters, especially, you know, as you look at the epidemiology of this disease, and we don't fully understand the transmission mechanisms yet, you know, there are a lot of unknowns. And in the last few days, a lot of people have been talking about how, you know, it's inevitable that we're going to get this kind of spreading. So we have to shift to, you know, this kind of containment strategy to how are we going to treat the large number of people that are going to be affected. So I don't know yet. It's evolving day by day. I think we continue to be surprised by these new outbreak clusters, right? I think, going back to your earlier question, one of the big questions confronting a lot of manufacturing globally has been kind of the relative undiversification of their supply from China, right? We are going to see some surprising shortages. For example, I'm predicting we're going to see spot shortages in over-the-counter pain medications, just because paracetamol, which most of it is manufactured in China and goes to India for incorporation in things like acetaminophen. Tylenol is one of the brands of acetaminophen. Okay, we'll see spot shortages in that, because you can already see it rippling through the supply chain. And then that's going to cause questions about the whole economic structure of how do I want to have my products manufactured. So I think, you know, there will be the impact on the events. There's going to be a rethink of how diversified is my supply base, you know, how reliant do I want to be on these points of failure that we're seeing today.
And how can I make my supply base less vulnerable to viruses like coronavirus? What will the answer to those questions be, though, Professor, do you think?
Well, I think people are starting to think about it now. And what's interesting about this is the trade war between the U.S. and China was already causing some people to think about it. But a lot of people said, well, you know, I really don't have much choice, because many of those components of my, you know, sole source of supply is China. This is going to force a rethink of that. It's a little early to say what the outcome is going to be, because in many respects, it's very hard to replace somebody like China that has the human capacity and, you know, the physical resource capacity for this type of manufacturing. But it's going to be a major rethink. You know, one of the reasons we're starting to see a lot of these shortages now is the whole notion of lean manufacturing. I don't want to have a lot of inventory on hand. Okay, all of these things play into amplifying the type of problem that we have now. So this is going to be one of those turning points in my book.
David Dubois, have you spoken to colleagues of yours in Beijing, in China? Can you tell us how they're trying to ensure that their businesses aren't as vulnerable to coronavirus as it has been so far?
Oh, definitely. We have an office in Beijing. We are a Chinese-approved NGO, non-government organization, so we have a lot of members in China. And I can give you a quick example. I have a good friend here in Dallas where I live. He's a Chinese-American. He has two factories in China. He has a factory in upstate New York. And he was telling me the other day that because of the vulnerability, as the professor said, about the trade challenges that hopefully are settling down, and my goodness, who knows what's going to happen once this scenario of the disease gets mitigated. He's moving some of his manufacturing to his upstate New York facility. So, unfortunately, it's going to have a big effect on China. But as the professor said, before this even happened in mid-January, and this epidemic started to occur, we were seeing a lot of folks who were doing business in factories in China and all of Asia now reconsidering where they might reallocate and enhance their supply chains, as the professor said.
Yeah, indeed. And from what David Dubois is saying, Professor, he's given us a bit of an insight as to how businesses might change the way that they operate over the next 12 months or so. Can you think of any other ways as well? It struck me, for example, that once upon a time, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd heard the factory whistle blow and there'd be thousands upon thousands of workmen and women leaving a factory. Over time, as a result of, you know, whatever it might be, industrial strife or whatever it might be, we've seen a lot of automation in those once upon a time very manpower-heavy industries. And I wonder whether that will be part of the consequence of this. We'll see less people in manufacturing and even more robots, and we won't see the business leaders flying on planes to go and see each other over the next 12 months in the immediate future. Can you think of ways that the way that we do business will change in the next year or so?
Well, I think, Dutton, that it we'll see change, but some of that change was already in progress. For example, it would probably surprise a lot of people, but China has been really pushing very hard on automation because they are facing rising labor costs. And in fact, a lot of the labor-intensive industries have already, you know, for example, garments and furniture and some of those things where there is a lot of labor on relatively lower value-add goods. A lot of those have moved to lower-cost regions like Southeast Asia, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and so on. Okay, I think, and so China has been pushing towards more automation. They've been realizing that they, in order to stay competitive, they need to do that. And if you bring work into the U.S. or you bring work into Mexico, you will see higher use of automation, or Europe as well, Western Europe in particular, but also Eastern Europe, as you know, as I watch those, you'll see more use of automation just because of higher labor costs. Okay, the critical question now will be, do companies say, I need to have multiple sources of supply, and do I need to go to more regionalized manufacturing that will be more robust in the face of this type of geographic disruption? What's really happened in China now is it's not only the shutdown of the factories, but it's the shutdown of the global logistics chains, you know, the ocean shipping, air cargo. You know, passenger cargo in China in January fell 93%. The number of flight cancellations is unbelievable. IATA is quoting like $30 billion of revenue lost to the airlines. But, you know, shutdown of air cargo, shutdown of ocean shipping, these so-called blank shipments where, you know, the ships have stopped sailing. If you look at companies like Maersk and China Ocean Shipping, how many things they've canceled. People are looking at that and saying, wow, I am really dependent on a very complex network to make this all work. And when, you know, something like this happens, I don't have any alternatives. I can't tell you how many firms, factory managers I've talked to who just don't know what they're going to do next, okay, because they don't have many alternatives. So I think that's going to cause a gigantic rethink.
Professor Shi, thank you very much. Thanks also to David Dubois, Professor Willie Shi of Harvard Business School, and David Dubois, President and CEO of the International Association of Exhibitions and Events, talking to us from Texas there. Thanks to you for all your